behavior? Children are so impressionable. It wouldn't be right.
Isabel went for her whip. Alec dragged his sister back.
You Lightwood kids are out of control and out of your minds, muttered Irina.
Jace had appeared beside Alec and Isabel and given Irina a radiant smile.
Yes, we are.
Alec had told himself that it was all right. It was a comfort, sometimes, when he was most worried about his friends, to consider that both Magnus and Max were warlocks. They didn't have to fight demons. Raphael mimicked how Alec was walking with careful precision. He was going to be good one day, Alec thought. Whoever got to raise him would be proud.
Well done, Rafe, he said. He hadn't meant the nickname to come out, it just had.
But Raphael glanced at him and smiled. They fell silent, crouching down as the shadow hunter departed the warlock's house. Jem raised his eyebrows at Alec, who shook his head. Once the man was gone, they helped Rafe down from the roof.
I wonder how far the corruption goes in this institute, Jem said soberly.
We'll know soon enough, Alec said. I heard that mercenary say, the next delivery from Breakspear will be at midnight tonight. If he's delivering women, we need to save them and stop the shadow hunters as well as the warlock. We need to catch them all at once, and there are a lot of people inside. We don't know how many might be prisoners and how many might be guards. We need reinforcements. And there's someone I want to talk to about that before we go back to Tessa and Lily. I have to believe not all the shadow hunters in this city are traitors.
Jem nodded. As they left the alley, Alec described the fairy woman he and Lily had seen, her withered apple face and dandelion hair.
Lily said she might have information about the family you're searching for.
Jem's expression darkened.
I've encountered her before. I'll know who she is when I see her at the market, and I will make sure she talks.
His face was cold and grim for a moment. Then he glanced toward Alec.
How is Lily?
Alec tried to work out if he'd let something slip that he shouldn't.
You're worried for your friend, Jem said. Perhaps you are more worried for her because how she feels makes you think of how Magnus will feel one day.
Jem's eyes were as dark as the silent city, and as sad.
I know.
Alec wouldn't have been able to put any of that into words himself. There was only the nameless shadow of Magnus's face sometimes, the echo of old loneliness, and Alec's yearning to protect him always, and knowledge he could not.
You were nearly immortal. Is there any way to make it easier?
I've lived a long time, said Jem. But I've lived in a cage of bones and silence, feeling my heart turn to ashes. I can't explain what it's like.
Alec thought of growing up in the Institute, crushed under the weight of his father's expectations as if they were stones, trying to teach himself not to look, not to speak, not to dare try and be happy.
Maybe I know, he said.
Not entirely.
Not for 100 years, obviously, but maybe a little.
He worried he was presuming, but Jem smiled as if he understood.
It's different for my Tessa and your Magnus. They were born what they are, and we love them for it. They live forever in a changing world and still have the courage to find it beautiful.
We all want to shield our best beloved from whatever danger or sorrow comes, he said.
But we have to trust them too.
We have to believe that they will have the strength to live on and laugh again. We fear for them, but we should believe in them past fear.
Alec bowed his head and said, I do.
A block from the Buenos Aires Institute, Alec's phone buzzed again. Clary had sent him a message. A few months ago, they'd left Max with Maris and gone out of town. Simon's old band was playing at Pandemonium, and Simon had agreed to sub in for their missing bass player, as he occasionally did. Alec, Magnus, Jace, Clary, and Isabel had all gone to listen. Simon's friend Eric had written a song called My Heart is an Overripe Melon Bursting for You, and that song was the worst. Alec didn't like to dance unless it was with Magnus. Even then, he preferred the music not be terrible,
Magnus, Jace, and Isabel went to dance, the brightest points in the crowd. Alec enjoyed watching Magnus for a while, his chin propped on his hands. Then he grew tired of the assault on his ears. He caught Clary's eye. She was sitting bolt upright in her chair, only wincing occasionally.
"This is fine," Clary told him, nodding bravely.
"This is terrible," said Alec. "Let's go for tacos."
Simon was only just off stage by the time they got back, drinking from a bottle of water and asking everybody what they thought of the set.
"You were very sexy up there," Isabel was saying, sparkling up at Simon as Alec and Clary arrived.
Simon smiled a crooked smile.
"Really?"
Jace said, "No."
"You were so great," Clary exclaimed, dashing up to Simon. "Wow, I don't know what other word there could be. You were great. The band was great."
Clary was a true and noble parabatai, but Simon was a sharp guy and had known her a long time. His eyes traveled from Clary's guilty face to Alex.
"You went for tacos again," Simon lamented.
Alec grinned.
"They were great."
He went over to Magnus, sliding an arm around his waist. Since they were going to a club, Magnus had swept silver glitter under his golden eyes, and he looked like starshine in moonlight.
"I know you were dancing," Alec said in his ear, "but the band was terrible, right?"
"I can dance to anything," Magnus murmured back. "But I have personally heard Mozart play, also the Sex Pistols in their best days. I can confirm Simon's band is beyond terrible."
Alec's friends were gathered all around him and his family, and it was one of those moments when he remembered the desperate loneliness of when he was younger, hopelessly torn between fearing for what he might never have and what he might lose. Alec secured his hold on Magnus's waist and felt a small, incredulous starburst of happiness in his chest. That he could have all this.
"Tacos again next time?" Alec had whispered as they left, and Clary nodded behind Simon's back.
That was how Alec had come to love her, after resenting her so much at first. In the greatest or smallest of ways, Clary never failed. She hadn't failed him now. She'd sent a picture saying, "We have been imprisoned by the dread pirate Max." Alec suspected this was a joke he didn't understand. Clary was at an odd angle taking the selfie, but he could see Magnus and Max well enough. Magnus had dashed brilliant blue color through the front of his hair. Max was holding on to Magnus's spiky blue locks and Clary's red curls with one hand each, and looking supremely self-satisfied. Magnus was laughing.
"Oh, look," said Alec softly and showed Raphael the picture.
Raphael snatched the phone, then skipped away to contemplate the photo further. Alec let him keep it for now. He and Jem stopped at the door of the Buenos Aires Institute. As Alec had hoped, Joaquin was guarding the door again. He greeted Alec happily, then gave the faint scars on Jem's face a startled glance.
"Are you the silent brother whom the heavenly fire changed?" he asked eagerly. "The one who ran off and married a warlock?"
"Yes," said Jem. Somewhere in his quiet voice and his smile, there was an edge of shining defiance.
"I am sure she's very nice," said Joaquin hastily.
"She is," Alec confirmed.
"I don't know many downworlders," Joaquin said apologetically. "Though I met Alec's friend yesterday, she also seemed nice. There are a lot of nice downworlders, I'm sure, just not in our city. They say the Queen of the Shadow Market is a terrifying tyrant."
Alec thought of Juliet with her kids gathered around her.
"I didn't think so."
Joaquin looked at him with wide eyes.
"I bet you're not afraid of anything, though."
"Some things," said Alec.
"Failing."
"You know there's something wrong with your institute, don't you? I want to believe you're not part of it, but you have to know something is very wrong."
Joaquin avoided Alec's gaze, and as he did, he caught sight of Raphael for the first time. Raphael was hanging back, clutching Alec's phone.
"That's little Raphael," said Joaquin.
Raphael blinked up at him and corrected in his small, stern voice.
"Rafe."
"You know him?" asked Alec.
Then you knew there was a Shadowhunter child living in the Shadow Market. It's the duty of Nephilim to care for war orphans.
Joaquin faltered.
I tried, but he won't let anyone near him. It was like he didn't want to be helped.
Everyone wants to be helped, said Alec. Joaquin was already kneeling down, offering Raphael a brightly wrapped piece of candy. Rafe eyed him, then came cautiously forward, snatched the candy, and retreated behind Alec's legs. Alec understood being young and scared, but there came a time where you had to choose to be brave. Here's an address, he said, offering a scrap of paper. If you want to find out what's really happening at your institute, meet me there tonight. Bring reinforcements. Only the people you trust. Joaquin didn't meet Alec's eyes, but he accepted the piece of paper. Alec walked away with Jem and Raphael on either side of him.
Do you think he will come? Jem asked.
I hope so, said Alec. We have to trust people, right? Like you were saying, not just people we love. We have to believe in people, and we have to defend them. As many people as possible so we can be stronger.
He swallowed. I have a confession to make. I'm jealous of you.
Jem's face was genuinely startled. Then he smiled.
I'm a little jealous of you, too.
Of me? Alec asked, startled.
Jem nodded toward Raphael and the picture of Magnus and Max in Raphael's hands.
I have Tessa, so I have the world, and I have loved going all through the world with her. But there are times I think about a place that could be home. My Parabatai. A child.
All the things Alec had. Alec felt as he had last night, putting on Raphael's boots over his battered feet, stricken, but knowing this was not his pain. He hesitated.
Couldn't you and Tessa have a child?
I could never ask her, said Jem. She had children once. They were beautiful, and they are gone. Children are meant to be our immortality. But what if you live forever, and your child does not? I saw how she had to rip herself away from them. I saw what it cost her. I will not ask her to suffer like that again.
Rafe held up his hands to be carried. Alec swung him up in his arms. Warlock hearts beat differently, and Alec was used to hearing the sound of Magnus's and Max's hearts, infinitely steady and reassuring. It was odd holding a child with a mortal heartbeat, but Alec was getting used to the new rhythm. The evening sun was scorching on whitewashed walls of the street they were heading down. Their shadows were long behind them, but the town was still bright, and Alec saw for the first time that it could be lovely. Occasionally, Alec despaired that the world couldn't be changed or even that it wouldn't change fast enough. He was not immortal and didn't want to be, but there were times he was afraid he wouldn't live long enough, that he'd never have the chance to take Magnus's hands in front of everyone they loved and make a sacred promise. At those times, there was an image Alec held against exhaustion or surrender, a reminder to always keep fighting. When he was gone, when he was dust and ashes, Magnus would still be walking through this world. If the world was changed for the better, then that unknowable future would be better for Magnus. Alec could imagine that on some scorching hot day like this, on a strange street in a strange land, Magnus might see something good that reminded him of Alec. Some way that the world was changed because Alec had lived. Alec couldn't imagine what the world would be like then. But he could imagine, in some faraway future, the face he loved best. Jem filled Tessa in on what they had seen and who they were searching for in the Shadow Market. Lily caught Jem's glance at her as he explained.
What are you looking at, you delicious peanut butter and jam sandwich?
Tessa snorted behind Jem.
I've got more names, Lily told her, encouraged. They just come to me. Want to hear them?
Not really, said Jem.
Definitely not, snapped Alec.
Yes, said Tessa. Yes, I really do.
Lily regaled her with many names on their way to the Shadow Market. Tessa's laughter was like a song to Jem.
but he was glad when they reached the Shadow Market. Though the place was a barbed wire fortress and the door had been barred against them last time. The door was not barred against them tonight. Jem was accustomed to Shadow Markets by now, after years searching through them for answers about demons and Herondales. He was also used to being somewhat conspicuous among the people of the market. Tonight, though, everyone was looking at Alec and Lily. The queen of the Shadow Market, a rather lovely and dignified young woman, came out among the stalls to greet them personally. Alec drew her aside to tell her of their plans for the evening and to ask for her help. The queen smiled and agreed.
"They're from the Alliance,"
he heard one teenager werewolf whisper to another in awed tones. Alec bowed his head and fussed over Rafe. Alec seemed slightly abashed by all the attention. Jem met Tessa's eyes and smiled. They had seen other generations pass, shining bright and hopeful, but Alex was something new. Alec paused to talk to a fairy girl in her teens. "Rose, have you seen a fey woman with dandelion hair at the market tonight?"
"You must mean Mother Hawthorne," said Rose.
"She's always here. She tells stories to the children. Loves children. Hates everybody else. If you're looking for her, stick around the kids. She's sure to come." So they headed toward a campfire where most of the children were congregated. A fairy was playing the bandoneon at this fire. Jem smiled to hear the music. Rafe clung to Alec's shirt and glared jealously around. The other kids seemed intimidated by his scowl. A teenage warlock girl was doing magic tricks, creating shadow puppets in the smoke of the fire. Even Rafe laughed, all the sullenness gone from his face. He was only a child, leaning into Alec's side, learning to be happy. "He says she is very good," Lily translated for Alec. "He likes magic, but most of the powerful warlocks left ages ago. He wants to know if the cool man can do that." Alec took out his phone to show Raphael a video of Magnus and a witchlight. "Look, it turns red," Alec said, and Rafe instantly seized the phone. "No, we don't grab. We stop stealing. I have to text Magnus back sometime, and I can't do that if you keep stealing my phone." Alec glanced through the leaping iridescent flames at Jem. "I was wondering if you could give me some advice," he said. "I mean, you were saying all that stuff earlier, like, romantic stuff. You always know what to say."
"Me?" Jem asked, startled.
"No, I've never thought of myself as very good with words. I like music. It's easier to express what you feel with music."
"Alec is right," said Tessa.
Jem blinked.
"He is? At some of the worst and darkest times in my life, you have always known what to say to comfort me," said Tessa. "I had one of my darkest moments when we were young, and we had only known each other a little while. You came to me and said words that carried with me like a light. That was one of the moments that made me fall in love with you." She lifted her hand to his face, her fingers tracing the scars there. Jem dropped a kiss on her wrist.
"If my words comforted you, we are even," he said. "Your voice is the music I love best in all the world."
"You see," Alec muttered darkly to Lily.
"We do love an eloquent babe," said Lily.
Tessa leaned close to Jem and whispered in the language she'd learned from him,
"Wo yao ni."
And at that moment, looking into her eyes, Jem caught a flash of movement and then stillness in the dark. The fairy woman with the dandelion hair had been coming toward the children, pushing her little cart full of poisons. She stopped at the sight of Jem. She recognized him, as he did her.
"Mother Hawthorne," said the warlock girl Tessa had talked to, "have you come to tell us a story?"
"Yes," said Jem. He rose to his feet and advanced on her.
"We want to hear a story. We want to hear why you hate the Herondales."
Mother Hawthorne's eyes widened. Her eyes were colorless and pupilless, as if her eye sockets were filled with water. For a moment, Jem thought she would run, and he tensed to spring after her. Tessa and Alec were ready to come for her as well. Jem had waited too long to wait another moment.
Then Mother Hawthorne looked around at the children and shrugged her thin shoulders.
"Ah, well," she said, "I have waited more than a century to boast of a trick. I suppose it doesn't matter now. Let me tell you the story of the first heir."
They found a solitary campfire, with no children to hear a dark tale save Raphael, solemn-faced and silent in the protective curve of Alec's arm. Jem sat down with his friends and his beloved to listen. Light and shadows danced a long dance together, and by the strange fireside of the shadow market, an old woman wove a tale of faery.
"The Seely Court and the Unseely have always been at war, but there are times in war that wear the mask of peace. There was even a time that the king of the Unseely Court and the queen of the Seely Court made a secret truce and had a union to seal it. They conceived a child together and agreed that one day that child would inherit both the Seely and Unseely thrones and unite all faery. The king wished all his sons to be raised as pitiless warriors, and he believed this first heir would be the greatest of them all. Since the child would have no mother in the Unseely Court, he engaged my services, and I thought myself honored. I have always been fond of children. Once they called me the great fairy midwife. The king of the Unseely Court had not expected a daughter, but when the child was born, a daughter she was. She was given into my hands in the Unseely Court on the day she came into the world, and from that day to this day, the light of her eyes was the only light I wished for. The Unseely King was displeased with his daughter, and the Seely Queen was enraged that he would not, being displeased, give her back. There came a prophecy from our soothsayers that the day the first heir reached for their full power, all of faery would fall under shadow. The king was murderously angry, and the queen was terrified, and all the shades and shadows and rushing waters in my land seemed to threaten the head that I loved. The war between Seely and Unseely raged all the more fiercely for the brief peace, and the fairy folk whispered that the first heir was cursed, and so she fled, fearing for her life. I did not call her the first heir. Her name was Oraline, and she was the loveliest thing that ever walked. She took refuge in the mortal world, and she found it beautiful. She was always searching for the beauty in life, and it always made her sad to find ugliness instead. She liked to go to the shadow market and mingle with the downworlders and mundanes who did not know of her birth and would not call her cursed. After visiting the shadow market for many decades, she met a magician there who made her laugh. He called himself Roland the Astonishing, Roland the Extraordinary, Roland the Incredible, as if he were something special, when she was the unique one. I hated that insolent boy from the moment I laid eyes on him. When he was not calling himself one of his foolish magician's names, he called himself Roland Loss. But that was another lie. "No," Tessa said very softly. "It wasn't." Nobody heard her but Jem. "There was a warlock woman he said he loved as a mother, but Roland was no warlock, nor a mundane with the sight. He was something far more deadly than that. I learned this warlock's secret. She took a shadow hunter child across the seas to America and raised him, pretending he was not Nephilim. Roland was descended from that child. Roland was drawn to our world because his blood called him to it. That boy's true name was Roland Herondale. Roland suspected enough of his heritage, and he paid to learn more at the market. He told Oraline all his secrets. He said he couldn't go to the Nephilim and be one of them, lest it endanger the warlock woman he loved like a second mother. He said instead he would become the greatest magician in the world. Oraline lost all caution. She told him of the prophecy and the danger attached to it. Roland said they were both lost children, and they could be lost together.
He said he didn't mind being lost if he could be lost with her. She swore the same. He lured her away from my side. He told her to come live with him in the mortal world. He doomed her and called it love. They ran away together, and the king's fury was a fire that would have consumed a forest. He wanted the prophecy kept secret, which meant he needed Oraline back under his thumb or be killed. He sent his trusted messengers to every corner of the world hunting her, even the bloodthirsty riders of Manon. He had all the worst eyes of fairy looking for her. I kept watch for her myself, and love made my eyes the sharpest. I found her a dozen times, though I never told the king where she was. I will never forgive him for turning against her. I went to every shadow market and watched them together. My shining first heir and that awful boy. Oh, how she loved him, and oh, how I hated him. I was at a shadow market not long after Roland and Oraline went away together, and there I saw another angel boy, proud as God. He told me of his high position among the Nephilim, and I knew that his Parabatai was another Herondale. I played a cruel trick on him. I hope he paid for his arrogance and blood.
Matthew, whispered Tessa, the name sounding unfamiliar in her mouth, spoken for the first time in years. Matthew Fairchild had been the Parabatai to Tessa's son, James Herondale. Jem had known that this fairy had tricked Matthew to do a terrible deed, but he had thought it was only spite, not revenge. Even this fairy woman's voice sounded tired. Jem remembered feeling that way near the end of his days as a silent brother. He remembered being that hollow. "But what does that matter now?" asked the woman, as if speaking to herself. What did it matter then? Long years passed. Oraline spent decade after decade with her magician in the filth of the mundane world. My girl born to a golden throne. They were together all the days of his life. Oraline shared what she could of her fairy power with Roland, and he stayed young longer and lived longer than most of their filthy kind could. She wasted her magic, like someone prolonging the life of a flower. They can only make the flower last for a little more time before it withers. At last Roland grew old and older in the way of mortals, until he reached an end, and Oraline met the end with him. A fairy can choose a season of their own death. I knew how it would be when I first beheld them together. I saw her death in his laughing eyes. My Oraline. When Roland Herondale died, she laid down her golden head on the pillow next to her mortal love and never rose again. Their child wept for them both and threw flowers on their grave. Oraline could have lived for century after century, but she was hunted to the point of desperation, and she threw her life away for a foolish mortal love. Their child wept, but I never wept. My eyes stayed dry as the dust and dead flowers on their grave. I hated Roland from the day he took her from me. I hate all Nephilim for her sake, and the Herondales most of their kind. Whatever the Shadow Hunters touch is brought to destruction. Oraline's child had a child. There is still a first heir in the world. When the first heir rises, in all the awful glory bought by the blood of Seelie and Unseelie and Nephilim, I hope destruction comes to the Shadow Hunters as well as Fairy. I hope the whole world is lost. Jem thought of Roland and Oraline's descendant Rosemary, and the man she loved. They might have a child by now. The curse the fairies had talked about had already claimed lives. This danger was far greater than he had ever suspected. Jem had to protect Rosemary from the Unseelie King and the riders who brought death. If there was a child, Jem had to save that child. Jem had already failed to save so many. Jem rose and left Mother Hawthorne. He went to the barbed wire edge of the market,
moving desperately fast as if he could race back into the past and save those he had lost there. When he stopped, Tessa caught him. She held him in her arms, and when he stopped trembling, she drew his head down to hers.
Jem, my Jem, it's all right. I thought it was a very beautiful story, she said.
What?
Not her story, said Tessa. Not the story of her warped sight and terrible choices. I can see the story behind hers. The story of Oraline and Roland.
But all the people who were hurt, Jem murmured. The children we loved.
My James knew the power of a love story as well as I do, said Tessa. No matter how dark and hopeless the world seemed, Lucy could always find beauty in a story. I know what they would have thought.
I'm sorry, said Jem instantly.
He would not speak to her about children. He had loved Tessa's children, but they had not been his. Tessa had lost so much already, he could not ask her to lose more. She was enough for him. She always would be. Oraline grew up in horror. She felt cursed, and he was lost and wandering. They seemed destined for misery. Only they found each other, Jem. They were together and happy all the days of their lives. Her story is just like mine, because I found you.
Tessa's smile lit the night. She always brought hope when he was in despair, as she had brought words when everything within him was silence.
Jem put his arms around her and held on tightly.
I hope you learned what you needed to learn tonight, Alec told Jem and Tessa when they reached their rooms. Jem had looked upset when he bolted from the fireside, but he and Tessa had seemed different when they returned.
I hope they're all right, Alec said quietly to Lily when Jem and Tessa went off to prepare their midnight visit to the Warlock's house.
Of course Tessa's fine, said Lily.
You do realize she gets to go to the gymnasium anytime she wants.
I'm never talking to you again if those names don't stop, Alec told her, gathering his arrows and tucking daggers and seraph blades into his weapons belt. He found himself thinking of the heartbroken way Jem said Parabatai. It made him remember the shadow that hung over his father, the wound where Parabatai should be. It made him think of Jace. Ever since he could remember, Alec had loved and felt responsible for his family. There had never been any choice, but with Jace, it was different. Jace, his Parabatai, the first person who'd ever chosen him. The first time Alec had decided to choose someone back, to take on another responsibility. The first choice, opening the door to all the others. Alec took a deep breath and tapped out, "Miss you," into his phone. He immediately received back, "Miss you too," and let himself take a breath, the ache in his chest easier now. Jace was there, waiting for him in New York with the rest of his family. Talking about feelings wasn't so bad. Then he received another text.
Are you okay? In rapid succession, Alec received several more texts. Are you in some kind of trouble? Did you get hit in your head?
Then he got a text from Clary.
Why did Jace get a text from you and look very pleased, but then suddenly very worried? Is something going on?
Talking about feelings was the worst. Once you did it, everybody immediately wanted you to do it more.
Alec typed out a grouchy, "I'm fine," and then called out cautiously, "Rafe?"
Raphael popped immediately up from his bed.
"Would you like the phone back?" asked Alec.
"Here it is. Take it.
Don't worry if any more texts arrive. Just show me if there are any more pictures." He didn't know how much Raphael understood of what he said. He suspected not much. But Rafe certainly understood the gesture of Alec offering his phone. He held out his hands eagerly.
"You're a good kid, Rafe," said Alec. "Take that phone away."
"Are we going to smuggle our way into the house in laundry carts?" Lily asked Alec excitedly.
Alec blinked at her. "No, we're not."
"What laundry carts? I'm a straightforward person. I'm going to knock on the door."
He stood with Lily on the cobbled street before that great gray house. Jem and Tessa were waiting on the roof. Alec had literally used rope to tie Rafe to Jem's wrist.
I know Rafe stole your phone, said Lily, but who stole your sense of adventure?
Alec waited and the door opened. A warlock blinked up at him. He looked as if he was in his early 30s, a businessman with close-cropped blonde hair and no visible warlock mark until he opened his mouth and Alec saw his forked tongue.
Oh, hello, he said. Are you another of Clive Breakspear's men?
Alec said, I'm Alec Lightwood.
The warlock's face cleared.
I see. I've heard of you, he winked. Fond of warlocks, aren't you?
Some of them, said Alec.
Want your cut, I expect.
That's right.
No problem, the warlock told him. You and your vampire friend should come in, and I'll explain what I'll want in return. I think the vampire will be very amused. They don't like werewolves, do they?
I don't like most people, Lily said helpfully. But I do love murder.
The warlock waved his hand to let them through the wards and led them through a hexagonal hall with a ceiling curved in a shape like a plaster jelly mold. The green quartz of the floor shone like jade. There were no signs of ruin or decay here. The warlock obviously had money.
There were several doors, all painted white, set in the many walls. The warlock chose one and led Alec and Lily down rough-hewn stone steps into the dark. The smell hit Alec before the sight did. There was a long stone passage with flaming torches on the walls and with grooves on either side for filth and blood. Along the passageway were rows of cages. Eyes shone from behind the bars, catching the firelight in the same way Juliet's eyes had shone from her throne in the shadow market. Some cages were empty, and others were huddled shapes that were not moving.
So you've been taking werewolf women, and the shadow hunters have been helping you, said Alec.
The warlock nodded, with a cheery smile.
Why werewolves? Alec asked grimly.
Well, warlocks and vampires can't bear children, and fairies find it difficult, said the warlock in a practical tone. But the werewolves whelp more easily, and there's a great deal of animal strength. Everybody says that downworlders can't bear warlock children, that their bodies always reject them, but I thought of putting a little magic in the mix. People whisper about a warlock born from a shadow hunter woman, and that's probably a myth. But it got me thinking. Imagine the power a warlock might have with a werewolf mother and a demon father. He shrugged.
Seems worth trying. Of course, you do use up the werewolf women at a terrible rate.
How many have died?
Lily asked casually. Her expression was unreadable.
Oh, a few, the warlock admitted genially. I'm always in need of fresh supplies, so I'm happy to pay you to snatch more. But these experiments haven't been going as well as I'd like. Nothing has worked yet.
You're, close to Magnus Bane, aren't you?
I'm probably the most powerful warlock you'll ever meet, but I hear he's pretty good, too. If you can get him to come on in an assisting capacity, you'll be very well rewarded. So will he. I think you'll both be very happy.
Alec said, Yeah, I hope so.
It wasn't the first time someone had assumed Magnus was for sale. It wasn't the first time someone had assumed that because Alec was connected to Magnus, Alec was sullied. That used to make Alec angry. It still did, but he'd learned to use it. The warlock turned his back to Alec, surveying the cages as if selecting a product from a market stall.
So, what do you say? He asked idly. Do we have a deal?
I don't know yet, said Alec. You don't know my price.
The warlock laughed.
What is it?
Alec sighed the warlock's feet out from under him, so he fell to his knees. He drew his seraph blade and held it to the man's throat. All the women go free, he said, and you are under arrest. Alec realized why the warlock was burning torches, and not witchlight or electricity, when a torch tumbled out of the wall and onto the straw. He had to leap to stamp out the fire. The warlock was good, Alec thought, as the world went orange with not just fire but magic,
crisscrossing from the bars, blinding Alec with its light. Then, another light sliced through the orange wires of magic, pearly gray cutting through all darkness. Tessa Gray, daughter of a prince of hell, stood at the foot of the stairs with her hands glowing. Tessa's magic was all around him. Alec had learned how to sense magic over the years, learned to move with it and fight with it as another weapon on his side. This wasn't the singeing power he was used to, well-known and well-beloved as his bow, but it felt friendly. He let Tessa's magic wrap around him, cooling and protecting as he ducked through the fiery spars of power back to the warlock. "The most powerful warlock I've ever seen," Alec snarled. "She cut through your wards like tissue paper, and my man would eat you for breakfast." He made a mistake because he was overconfident. He didn't hear Tessa's stifled sound, and he didn't see the shadow moving as he swept his blade toward the warlock. Clive Breakspear's seraph blade met his. Alec met Breakspear's furious eyes. He looked to Tessa, struggling with three shadow hunters with Jem coming to help her, Lily with another shadow hunter prowling toward her, and he glanced toward the warlock, who was making every torch fall. Alec was used to being able to see the whole battle, fighting at a distance. Too late, he saw the blade in Clive Breakspear's free hand, aimed for his heart. Raphael barreled out of the shadows and sank his teeth deep into Breakspear's wrist. The blade dropped to the stone. The man roared, and with all the Nephilim strength that should be used to shield the defenseless, he hurled Raphael's body into the cage bars. There was a sickening crack. Alec shouted, "No!" He backhanded Clive Breakspear in the face. The warlock dashed a torch at his feet, and Alec stepped over the flames and seized him by the throat, then lifted him like a doll and smashed the warlock's skull against Breakspear's forehead. The warlock's eyes rolled back, but Breakspear screamed in outrage and charged at Alec. There was still a seraph blade shining in his hand, so Alec broke that hand, then used his hold on it to force the corrupt shadow hunter to his knees. Alec stood over them, panting so hard his chest felt as if it would split apart. He wanted to kill them both. Only Raphael was here. Magnus and Max were at home, waiting for him. Tessa, Jem, and Lily had made short work of the shadow hunters attacking them. Alec turned to Tessa now. "Will you enchant ropes to hold them?" he asked. "They have to stand trial." Tessa moved forward. So did Lily. Alec knew the situation was desperate because Lily didn't make a joke about murdering them. Alec was too close to the edge. He was afraid he would have taken her up on it. He went to the place where Raphael lay, his body a small wretched shape thrown into the dirt. Alec pulled Rafe into his arms, feeling his throat close up. He understood now what he had found here in Buenos Aires. He understood that it might be too late. Raphael's grubby face was still. He was barely breathing. Jem came to kneel beside them.
"I'm so sorry. He slipped the rope, and I came in for him, but...
"It isn't your fault," Alec said numbly. Jem said, "Give him to me." Alec stared at Jem, then bundled Rafe into his arms. "Take care of him," he said. "Please." Jem took Rafe and ran toward Tessa, and together they rushed up the stone steps. There was still orange magic in the air, and the flames had caught in earnest. Smoke was rising fast, in a thick, choking cloud. One of the werewolf women reached out a thin hand and clutched the bars.
"Help us!"
Alec took an axe with an electrum head from his belt and struck open the lock on her cage. "That's what I'm here to do." He paused. "Lily, are there keys on that warlock?"
"Yep," said Lily. "Just grabbed them. I'll open the doors with the keys and you can keep doing your cool dramatic axe thing."
"Fine," said Alec. The werewolf woman who had spoken to him bolted out the door as soon as she was free. The woman in the next cage couldn't walk. Alec walked into the cage and knelt beside her, and that was when he heard the sounds of a fight breaking out at the top of the stairs. He picked the woman up and ran for the stairs. Tessa and Jem were in the hall, almost at the doors. The burning house was crawling with shadow hunters. Jem couldn't fight because he was holding Raphael. Tessa was doing her best to clear a way for them,
but Raphael needed Tessa's help, too. One man shouted, "Where's our leader?"
"You call that a leader?"
Alex shouted back. He looked at the woman in his arms, then held her out so the shadow hunters of the Buenos Aires Institute could see. He helped a warlock do this. He crushed a child's body against a wall. Is that what you want to lead you? Is that what you want to be? Several shadow hunters turned to him in total puzzlement. Lily quickly shouted out a translation. Joaquin stepped forward. Lily said quietly. He told them to stand down. The man who'd shouted for his leader hit Joaquin across the mouth. Another shadow hunter shouted in startled fury and produced a whip, defending Joaquin. Alec ran his eyes over the crowd. Some of the shadow hunters looked uncertain, but shadow hunters were soldiers. Too many of them were intent on following whatever orders they had been given, fighting Joaquin and Alec and whoever else stood in their way to get to an unworthy leader. They were blocking Jem and Tessa's way. They were keeping Rafe from help. The doors of the burning house burst open. The Queen of the Shadow Market stood outlined against the smoke. "Get to Alec!" Juliet shouted, and a dozen werewolves and vampires sprang. Juliet cleared a path. Jem and Tessa slipped out the door. Rafe was out of this place of filth and smoke. Alec fought toward Juliet.
"Mon Dieu," she breathed when she saw the woman in Alec's arms.
She made a gesture, and a warlock jumped to take the unconscious werewolf out into the night. "There are more women down there," Alec said. "I'll get them. Some of the shadow hunters are on our side." Juliet nodded.
"Which ones?"
Alec turned to see Joaquin fighting two shadow hunters at once. The man with the whip who'd come to help him was down. "That one," said Alec, "and whoever else he tells you." Juliet set her jaw and strode across the green quartz floor to Joaquin's side. She tapped one of the men fighting him on the shoulder. When he turned, she ripped out his throat with one clawed hand.
"Maybe take them alive," said Alec. "Not that guy, obviously."
Joaquin was staring at Juliet with eyes gone enormous. Alec remembered that Joaquin had heard tales of horror about the Queen of the Shadow Market. Juliet, with blood on her hands and firelight in her snarled hair, might not be doing a lot to dispel that image.
"Don't hurt her," Alec cried. "She's with us."
"Oh, good," said Joaquin.
Juliet squinted at him suspiciously through the smoke.
"You're not evil?"
"Trying not to be," said Joaquin.
"Bien,"
said Juliet.
"Show me who to kill.
I mean, take alive if possible." Alec left them to it. He spun around and raced back down the stairs, Lily at his heels. The smoke was thick in the passage below by now. Alec saw there were shadow hunters there already, getting Clyde Breakspear and his warlock confederate out. Alec's lip curled. "If your loyalty is to the Clave, put a watch on them. They're going to stand trial." He and Lily opened the remaining doors. The women who could move on their own did. Too many could not. Alec picked up one woman after another and carried them out. Lily helped women who needed support to walk. Alec gave the women to the downworlders of the shadow market whenever he could, so he was able to get back to the basement faster. Alec reached the top of the stairs with another woman and saw that the hall was deserted, taken over by smoke and falling masonry. Everyone had fled the death trap this building had become. Alec bundled the woman into Lily's arms. Lily was small enough that it was difficult, but she was strong enough to bear her weight.
"Take her! I have to get the others!"
"I don't want to go," Lily shouted over the crackling fire. "I don't ever want to abandon anybody again."
"You won't! Lily, go!"
Lily stumbled for the door under her heavy burden, sobbing. Alec turned back. The smoke had turned the whole world into a gray hell. He couldn't see or breathe. A hand caught his shoulder. Joaquin stood behind him.
"You can't go down there," he panted. "I'm so sorry about those women, but they're..."
"Downworlders," Alec said icily.
"It's too dangerous, and you have a lot to go back to."
Magnus and Max. If Alec closed his eyes, he could see them with absolute clarity, but he knew he had to be worthy of going back to them. Joaquin was still holding on to him. Alec shrugged him off, and not gently.
I will not leave one woman down there, abused and forgotten, he said. Not one. No real shadow hunter would.
He looked over his shoulder at Joaquin as he was going down the steps into hell.
You can leave, said Alec. If you do, you can still call yourself a shadow hunter.
But will you be one?
Raphael lay on the cobbled street as Jem and Tessa hovered over him. Jem used every silent enchantment he had learned among the Silent Brothers. Tessa whispered every healing spell she had learned in the Spiral Labyrinth. Jem could tell, from long, bitter experience, that there was too much broken and bruised within that small body. There was a fire burning and a battle raging. Jem could not pay attention to any of it, could not bring himself to care about anything but the child under his hands.
Dittany, Jem, Tessa whispered desperately. I need Dittany.
Jem climbed to his feet, searching the crowd. There were so many from the shadow market here. There was surely one who could help.
His gaze fell on Mother Hawthorne, with starlight on her dandelion hair. She met his eyes and made to run. Jem was fast as a shadow hunter still, when he had to be. He was at her side in a moment, catching her wrist.
Do you have Dittany?
If I do, snarled Mother Hawthorne, why should I give it to you?
I know what you did, more than a century ago, he said. I know better than you do. The trick you played, causing one shadow hunter to poison another. It poisoned an unborn child. Does that amuse you?
The fairy's mouth went slack.
That child died because of you, said Jem. Now there is another child who needs help. I could take the herb from you. I will, if I have to. But I'm giving you the chance to make another choice.
It's too late, said Mother Hawthorne, and Jem knew she was thinking of Oraline.
Yes, said Jem, merciless. It's too late to save the ones we lost. But this child is not lost yet. This choice is not lost yet. Choose.
Mother Hawthorne turned her face away, her mouth set in bitter lines. But she reached inside the worn pouch at her belt and put the herb into his hand.
Jem took it and raced back to Tessa. Raphael's body was arching under her hands. The dittany flared to life at her touch, and Jem joined his hands with Tessa's, joined his voice with hers as they spoke in all the languages they had ever taught each other. Their words were a song, their linked hands magic, and they poured everything they knew together into the child. Raphael's eyes opened. There was a flash of Tessa's pearlescent magic in his dark irises. Then it was lost. The child sat up, looking perfectly all right, well and whole and somewhat annoyed. He gazed into their distraught faces and asked, in clip Spanish,
Where is he?
He's in there, Lily answered.
The narrow cobbled street was full of members of the shadow market seeing to the werewolf victims, or herding shadow hunters, with some different, deeply nervous-looking shadow hunters tentatively assisting, or trying to put out the flames. Lily was not doing any of that. She stared at the house with her arms crossed, and her eyes dark with tears. As they watched, part of the roof collapsed. Rafe started forward. Tessa lunged and seized him, holding him as he strained against her grip. Jem stood.
No, Jem, said Tessa. Take the child. Let me go in.
Jem tried to take Rafe, but he was fighting them both. Then Rafe went still. Jem twisted around to see what the child was looking at.
What everybody was looking at.
There was a ripple in the crowd, then a hush. Jem did not think any of the shadow market or the Institute would forget what had happened here tonight. From the swirling smoke, out of the collapsing building, came two shadow hunters with werewolves in their arms. They walked tall, their faces grim, and people parted to let them pass. The women had been saved, and the child. Jem felt new resolution rise in him. Tessa was right. If Rosemary could be saved, he would save her. If there was a child, he and Tessa would stand between that child and the riders and the king. Alec carried the werewolf he bore to Tessa, who immediately began enchanting the smoke from her lungs. Then he dropped to his knees in front of Rafe.
Hey, my baby, said Alec. Are you all right?
Raphael might not entirely understand the language, but anyone could have understood the message of Alec on his knees in the rubble, the love and concern on his face. Raphael nodded, dust drifting from his curly hair, and walked into Alec's open arms. Alec folded the little boy against his chest.
"Thank you both," Alec said to Tessa and Jem. "You're heroes."
"You're welcome," said Jem.
"You're a moron," said Lily and put her face in her hands.
Alec rose and patted her awkwardly on the back. Rafe held in the circle of his other arm. He turned to Juliet, who had called one of her warlocks over to see the werewolf in Joaquin's arms.
"You got them all out?"
Juliet smiled at them both, her expression wondering, as if she was young as Rafe and seeing magic for the first time.
"You did it."
"The werewolf woman who was looking after Rafe," said Alec.
"Is she here?"
Juliet looked at the ashes drifting on the cobbled streets. The fire was dying, now that Tessa could spare magic to cool the flames, but the house was a ruin.
"No," said Juliet. "My girls tell me she was one of the first to die."
"I'm sorry," Alec told her, then his voice changed as he addressed Rafe.
"Rafe, I have to ask you something," he said.
"Solo mio."
"Steak?" Lily smirked.
"Damn it," said Alec.
"Sorry, Rafe, but will you come back with me to New York?"
"You can. I have to talk to...
If you don't like it there, you don't have to..."
Rafe watched him stumble over his words.
"I can't understand you, fool,"
he said sweetly in Spanish, and tucked his head down under Alec's chin, his arms going around Alec's neck.
"Okay," said Alec. "Good, I think."
Tessa walked away from the burned-out building. There were several warlocks in the crowd watching her with awe, Jem noted proudly. She strode over to the bound warlock and the head of the Buenos Aires Institute.
"Shall we ask Magnus to open a portal for them?" she asked.
"Not just yet," said Alec. There was a change in his demeanor, his shoulders going back, his face stern. If it weren't for the child in his arms, he might have been fearsome. Alec Lightwood, leader of the Alliance, said, "First, I want a word." Alec looked around at the assembled faces. His breathing felt as if it were tearing his throat. And his eyes were still stinging, but he was holding Rafe, so everything was perfectly all right. Except for the fact he had no idea what to say. He couldn't know how many of the Shadowhunters had cooperated with the capture and torture of these women. He suspected most of them had gone along with their leader's orders, but he didn't know how responsible that made them. If he arrested everybody, then the Institute would be left in empty ruin. The people here were owed protection. "Clive Breakspear, the head of the Buenos Aires Institute, broke the accords and will pay for it," he said at last and paused. "Lily, can you translate for me?"
"Absolutely, yes,"
Lily said promptly and began to do so. Alec listened to her talk, watched the faces of the people listening, and saw a few smirks. Alec listened more intently and picked up a word.
"Boludo,"
Alec said to Jem.
"What does that mean?"
Jem coughed.
"It's not a polite word."
"I knew it," Alec said.
"Lily, stop translating. Sorry, Jem, could you translate instead?" Jem nodded.
"I'll do my best."
"The head of your institute has brought shame on us all," Alec told the Shadowhunters. "I could bring everybody here to Alicante. I could have every one of you put to the trial of the sword. I know you were left after the war, to rebuild as best you could. And instead of leading you, this man brought more ruin. But the law says I should make each of you pay." Alec thought of Helen and Mark Blackthorne, cut off from their family by the cold peace. He thought of the way Magnus had sunk his face into his hands, despairing when the cold peace was passed. Alec never wanted to see that despair again. Every day since that day, he'd tried to work out ways that they could all live united. "What happened in that house should sicken any shadow hunter," said Alec. "We have to earn back the trust of everyone we have wronged. Joaquin, you will know the names of every man who was in Breakspear's inner circle.
They will go with their leader to stand trial. For the rest, it is time for a new leader, and a new chance to live as Nephilim should.
He glanced at Joaquin, who was wiping tears from his eyes. Alec frowned at him and mouthed,